ज्ञानधीरन्धस्याज्ञनञ्जनाशलाकया चाक्षुरुन्मीलितां येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। नामश्रेष्ठं मनुमापि सच्चिपुत्रम् आत्रा स्वरूपम् रूपं तस्याग्रजं मुरुपुरीं माधुरीं गोष्ठावतीं राधागुन्दं गिरिवरमहो राधिकमाधावशं प्राप्तो यस्य प्रतीतकृपाया श्रीगुरुं तं नतोऽस्मि। वञ्चाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्यैव च पतितानां पवनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। निखिलाश्रुतिमौलिरत्नमालद्युति निराजिता पदपङ्कजन्ता आजी मुक्ता कुलैरुपश्यामनं परितस्त्वं हरिणां संश्रयामि। अनार्पितचरीं चिरात् करुणायावतीर्णा कलहो समार्पयितुमुन्नतोज्ज्वलरासं स्वभक्तिश्रियम् हारीपुरता सुन्दरा द्युतिकदम्बसन्दीपितः सदा हृदये खन्दरे स्फुरतो वासचिनन्दनः। अजानुलम्बिता भुजो कनकावदतो सङ्कीर्तनाय कपितरो कमलाय तक्षो विश्वम्भरो द्विजाभरो जुगधर्मपालो वन्दे जगत्प्रियगुरो करुणावतारो लादिनी शक्तिस्वरूपाय गौरङ्गासुहृदाय च भक्तशक्तिप्रदनाय गदाधर नमोऽस्तुते। हे कृष्ण करुणा सिन्धो दीनबन्धो जगत्पते गोपेशा गोपिकाकान्ता राधाकान्ता नमोऽस्तुते। राधे वृन्दावनादिशे करुणामृतवाहिनी कृपया निजपादब्जा दास्यन्मह्यं प्रदीयतम्। भक्त्या विहीना अपराधलक्षये क्षिप्तष्टाकमादितरङ्गमाधे कृपा मयि त्वं शरणां प्रपानम् वृन्देर्मस्ते शरणारविन्दम् वृन्दे नमस्ते शरणारविन्दम्। श्री सच्चिदानंद गौर हरि की जय। श्री हरि नाम प्रभु की जय। श्री श्री गौर निताय की जय। साधु सांग की जय। सामवेद भक्त वृंद की जय। गौर प्रेमानंद So good morning to all of you. Pranam, thanks for being here today. One more day, our first day of the retreat. Every day, every new, every fresh. Day one, always. And day three, more officially. One day before Kartik, tomorrow we are officially starting our celebration of Kartik Brat. So hopefully all this also is a warm up in its own way to delve deeper into the month of love. Of course, every day, every second, every breath is for love, but sometimes we need some condensed reminder. So different traditions, we have these different seasons to pay to take our special attention and then hopefully to extend and universalize that to every moment gradually. So in our warming up yesterday, we have been talking a little bit about the notion of the context of our exploration of the book Evolution and Divine Love. We talked about preserving the tradition by breaking new ground. What does it mean to do that? How tradition is dynamic, how breaking new ground is not breaking apart the tradition, but just breaking new work ground to make everything more accommodating, more generous, more, as we talked yesterday, the nature of love is that outweighs its container, outgrows, sorry, outgrows, outweighs also, out everything. So love outgrows its container, so we require constant reaccommodation to host the new unfolding of love. The ongoing revelation of love requires newer and newer expanded containers. There's no limit to that. So a parampara or a tradition, a mystical school is in constant evolution because a spiritual mystical tradition is a particular voice to the ongoing revelation of love. And if love is ever evolving, as I try to make the case in my book, a tradition that embodies one voice of that ever-evolving love must be ever-evolving as well. And we, as members of those traditions, must be ever-evolving as well. And we are invited to make our contribution to that particular ongoing revelation of love. What's my contribution in the ongoing revelation of love? How that's supposed to take place in my specific case. And in that context, we also talk about deconstruction, the need for deconstruction, but also it's not only about deconstruction. Let's not just bring more dynamite to the whole thing. Deconstruct, deconstruct, deconstruct. There is construction going on. There is the need of deconstruction. There is the need of reconstruction. But the thread throughout all that, as Bhaktivedanta's point yesterday, is love. So we construct in the context of love, we deconstruct in the context of love, we reconstruct in the context of love. All that are different loving acts, right? Construction only is not loving. Deconstruction also can be an expression of love. So following with the theme, basically, today I like to think, of course, evolution in divine love speaks about an ever-evolving God. But also, please don't forget the other side of the coin, and let's bring balance. Also, we speak about God as changeless, right? So it's not black and white. It's not either or, right? It's got ever-evolving, and there's nothing changeless about the divine. No, the divine is changeless in a unique way, and the divine is ever-evolving in a unique way. So then we are entering into a topic that we may call paradox. Guests are coming. Do not get overtly distracted. We remain here. They will come. We will welcome them, but remain paradoxically present. Right? Though something else is going on. So again, God has changed this. God as simultaneously dynamic. That's a notion that is in nature paradoxical. And of course, for me personally, the notion of paradox is crucial in every way, not only in speaking about God, but in speaking, we were talking about deconstruction, construction, reconstruction, preserving the tradition. All that requires an embrace of paradox, as we will try to show today, you know, and coexisting with this principle, with this reality we call paradox. Not only paradox is something that is out there, but it's something that invites us to develop what we may call paradoxical thinking. In the same way, reality is non-dual, but you never understand that if you don't develop non-dual thinking. If you don't develop non-dual thinking, reality as non-dual will make zero sense for you. I was. It's in the same way, paradox is not only out there, but in here and in between and everywhere. But if we are not trained, so to say, in paradoxical thinking, we will miss paradox. We will miss the principle of paradox, which is everywhere. So if paradox is everywhere and we miss paradox, we miss everywhere. We miss everything. Remember, love becomes more and more expanded, and it grows and it develops more capacity to accommodate with what previously was not even there. So something new emerges, and that new emergence needs to be accommodated. And love create that spaciousness, you know, new layers of reality. So the more love evolves, in one sense, we'll say the more love becomes more paradoxical. As we will try to explain today. So what's paradox? Let's define words to begin with, because for some of you, it's like, Mara, stop talking about paradox and tell me what's paradox. So paradox is a word that comes from the Greek. So para and doxa. These are the two parts of the word. So para can mean beyond. Para can mean contrary to, interestingly. Beside, beyond, contrary to, that's para. And doxa means also a few things. One can mean opinion, belief, expectation. So the two put together, para, dox, means something like contrary to expectation. What we may call in English counterintuitive. Like in the immediate, it doesn't make sense. So I need to sit with that, stay enough time for it to make sense. And then we will say like, oh, right? But immediately it's like, what's that? We put defense mechanism, we reject it. We joke about it. That's false, that's absurd. And then, oh, right? So contrary to expectation or beyond the normal ways we think about things. That's basically a paradox. Another way of thinking, a superior way of thinking. Contrary to expectation. It's very interesting. All these words are very related. We speak a lot about ecstasy in our tradition. Ecstasy means outside of the norm. Right? It's a similar idea. Outside of the norm. In order to experience ecstasy, you need to thread an alternative road that is outside of the norm. It's not the common way. And we find these statements in every mystical revelation. Jesus will use this word of, what's the expression he does? Like, to enter into the kingdom of heaven. Gives the example of passing.
Yeah, travel
How do you
through.
say it in English?
Travel through the eye of the
Yeah. And Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita 7.3 also says, right? From many people, a few, and from those few, a few. And again, this is not a way of becoming exclusivistic. No? There's no hope for it most. Just a few got it. But just speaking about, there's a price to pay to access reality. And not everyone is willing to do so. Everyone is invited, everyone is welcomed. But not necessarily everyone at the same exact moment in the totality of creation is willing to undergo all that it takes. And a big part of it is paradox. Living life in ways that may sound counterintuitive and will feel counterintuitive to the norm. Again, that's why most saints and prophets are persecuted and killed many times because they're outside of the norm. Or outside of the box. No? That's another expression. You use that in England as well? No? Think outside of the box, which is another way of saying, of assuming probably we are existing in a certain box. No? Labels, self-identification, how we see ourselves, assumptions we have about others, about the world, about God, about us, about everything. Boxes. No? Putting things into boxes so they seem more controllable. More measurable, more manipulative, which in Sanskrit we call that Maya. basically. No? Maya means that which can be measured. That which can be put into a box. No? I put it in the box, it's measured, it's trapped. It's inside the box, it's under my control. It gives me certainty. No? I don't want uncertainty. I don't want mystery. I don't want paradox. Bring me boxes. I will compartmentalize reality and everything will go into its proper compartment and there will be peace and an order. An order. And then comes deconstruction. Now you can start to see how the connection between paradox and deconstruction and what we need to not only to think outside of the box, but to live outside of the box. Because again, as we say in the beginning, boxes have a purpose, but reality is not to be. You can use a box to take something to another place, but you can, if you keep whatever is inside the box, always inside the box. It's like it's not rendering its purpose. Right? And I'm moving from this house to another house. Okay, let's put the plates in the box to move them. But if the plates remain inside the box forever, the place is made not to be in a box, but to be a plate outside of the box. So the box can help to move something, but we are not meant to, the box is not meant to be our eternal residence, so to say, right? So thinking outside of the box. Thinking, daring to think outside of the box, because that requires courage. Again, boxes give certainty. They are useful in the beginning. They give a sense of belonging. I have my labels, I have my boxes. I think in this way. I have embraced official dogma and the official teachings. I believe the correct things. I'm a good boy. I'm a good girl. It gives me some security. It's okay. I'm not condemning that. But at one point, again, as we said the other day, what's nourishing me starts to suffocate me. What somehow gave me an initial sense of life starts to kill me. Yeah, right. So the box who had a purpose starts to eventually betray its original purpose. If I don't dare to see beyond the box, think outside of the box. So there are many ways in which we can think about outside of the box and also realize how much we still think inside the box. That's the beginning of thinking outside of the box, to gain some awareness of how trapped we may be in our ways of thinking and how usually we go to very predictable places when thinking and deciding and acting, and sometimes we need to be a little bit more adventurous. Now, remember, we are worshiping Krishna. One name of Krishna is Urukrama, as I mentioned in the book, the great adventurer. So you are up for an adventure. Don't tell anyone that you were not warned in advance. So adventure implies play. Lila means play, free play, improvisation, organic movement, unpredictability, surprise, awe, astonishment, excitement, aliveness. You all seem terrified. That's what life is about, right? Welcome, please. Speaking about surprise. Welcome, welcome, please. Take your seats. Thank you for coming. Take your seat, please. Welcome. Thanks for coming. Pleasure to meet you. Elena, Dominic, Charlie. Welcome. You didn't get lost in coming here? Okay, you're the exception to the rule. That was great. Okay, so we're talking a little bit what we were talking about, please, so I can test you, the ones who are here, and you can introduce our new friends.
Aliveness, living outside the box. Yeah. Paradox.
Paradox versus
The great adventure.
paradox.
Paradox.
Living, we live inside, so like a box.
Well,
We
if
live
we
in,
stay within the box, we
yeah.
don't live up to our potential.
Yeah.
We can't be what we're meant to be as long as we stay in the box.
Okay.
But there's a place for it at some point.
Yeah. So at the very end, we were saying how when I started try to explain how life is about real life, real liveness. It's about surprise, adventure, excitement, unpredictability, that which lies beyond, besides the comfort zone. And I was all excited saying that, but most of you were terrified. I mean, with good reason, I will say, in one sense, in the sense that it's scary to explore what lies beyond what we can control or measure.
Pen, we need a pen.
Dominic needs a pen?
Yeah.
Charlie also needs a pen? Okay. Okay, you have all pens and paper?
Yeah.
Okay, because we will do right now one exercise that requires pen and paper, right? For us, again, to gain a little bit more of awareness what it means to think outside of the box, and also how probably we are still in our way of thinking about things going to encroached, did you say in English?
Encroached.
Places. So I will share with you a famous exercise. I mean, famous. You may not know it. Those who know it, I mean, you can do it, but you will know it. So those who know it, sorry, you may not be able to fully participate. The idea is that you don't know it, so I hope you don't know it, which is the 9-dot exercise. Nobody knows it. Great. So I will show you. It's very easy. Very easy. It seems very easy. Let me see. I'm drawing here. Don't look. So in your paper, you have pen and paper. So you have to do this. You have to draw 9 points.
Okay.
Arrange in a, how say, 3x3 grid, like a square. Right? Put it in the camera for those who will be seeing it after. So now, yeah?
I didn't see
it. You cannot see?
No, there was a page behind that page that kind of got.
I'm writing. That's my diary. It's okay. So that's part one, of course. This is not it. It was not that easy. You are done. So now the task is you have to connect all the 9 dots using only 4 straight continuous lines. Yeah. Right. Yeah. I'll give you a few seconds. I like to see your a few. Yeah, I like to see your paradoxical faces now.
Just 4 lines.
4 straight lines. Straight continuous.
Continuous.
4 straight continuous lines. You have the prize. Okay, but let's wait. Don't show it to anyone. Okay, 10 more seconds. Yeah. And you cannot lift the pen, of course, right there.
Okay.
Wait.
I got it. No, you didn't. I did.
No, you didn't. Okay.
That was 4 lines.
That's it. Can you bring me the glass so I can do the. Without this, they don't pay attention to it. Okay. So raise your hand those who were able to do it.
Well, I thought I didn't.
So we can see in terms of percentage how many were able to do it too.
That's the mistake. They have an empty box and then
they won't. I'll give you an example besides how to do it. Right? This is how to do it.
You have to go
1, 2, 3, 4.
Can you do that? Right
there. I never say the words. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Oh.
Oh, you connected them all. I see.
Oh, like going on sorry, the ball.
Yeah, a word.
That was a prompt. A similar one? I don't see well, but if you did it, you did it. But the point is, in order to do it, you need to go outside of the box. No? Do it that way?
No.
There was another way?
We answered the question of how do you connect all the dots.
Okay, let's see. Now, this is inviting us to think more outside of the box.
But
you couldn't lift your pen. That's what I did.
No.
It was without lifting the pen. That's why I say four straight continuous lines. You couldn't do like this. So nobody did it actually.
Can you do like a
four straight continuous lines? Okay, so that's a classical example of what it means to think outside of the box, because usually we'll be like trying to try everything, but inside of the perimeter. Do you want to stretch a little bit more your brain juices?
Yes.
Now, with three straight lines.
With what?
Nine dots. The same thing, but with three now.
Three now?
Can we fold the three?
Huh?
Are we allowed to fold the three? No.
Okay, now new ideas outside the box are coming.
Nice.
Okay, that's it. End of the timing.
There's one, two, three.
One example how to do it in three straight lines. Good, Kenny.
Straight. Wait, but you did a tiny box.
I didn't make it. That's your choice. Nobody put the rules to them.
Yes.
What about with one line?
You have the dots.
Straight line.
Is it possible to do it?
It's possible, but not with a pen. You need to bring a big paintbrush like this. And that covers all that in one line. Anyhow, that's an exercise to make a point, right? Of how what it means to think outside of the box, right? We are talking about paradox. So the idea of paradox basically implies, or paradox invites us to think, how to put it, how to think beyond the lines we unconsciously draw. Because again, many times unconsciously we are drawing lines and perimeters and we are just allowed to move there. And there's so much to explore outside of that, but many times we don't dare to explore new rules of the game, so to say. And many times the solution to our problems lie outside of those boxes. Many times we try to solve something, but inside of the box. And the very problem that whatever we call problem comes to our lives is to invite us to a solution that lies outside of the box, right? Mm-hmm. That's why I always remember this quote from Albert Einstein. He will say, if I'm given 60 minutes to solve a problem, I will spend 55 mm-hmm. minutes trying to understand the problem and then 5 minutes solving it. Because many times understanding the problem implies, oh, I have to go outside of the box in that process. And then when I'm outside, oh, it was fast. It was easier to find a solution. So many times, again, unconsciously, we take our boundaries as absolute. No? We give absolute value to our boundaries, so we do not dare to go beyond those walls. And if in time we have fed those boundaries, the walls become so tall and thick that there seems to be nothing else outside of that. The fence. And again, reality, as we talk in evolution, the divine love is ever evolving. So it invites us to constantly break, again, boundaries, break perimeter to explore more and more and more. So for me, the topic of of paradox is very important. And today in the morning, I was thinking about some things to share today. That's why I didn't join you on breakfast. Sorry for that. I went beyond, I broke my box and took breakfast in my room. And I realized, oh, okay, interestingly, in my three books that I've written so far, in all of them, I'm addressing the topic of paradox. Mm-hmm. So I'd like to share a few sections from each one of those to at least to see how important that is, at least for me, but I will say I don't want it to make something that is just important for Swami Padmanabha. I think it's very important for all of us. So let's start with my first book. But I've quoted my first book, and this is not my first book, this is the second one. But I'm quoting here my first book, where I speak about paradox, and I say the following. This is a charged paragraph. So fasten your seatbelt. Unless and until we're duly introduced into the realm of paradox and gain some universal grounding in such gray areas, greater inclusivity will not be attained. And thus, we will lack the hosting capacity in relation to the highest prospect of spiritual attainment. Something that moves in a zigzag way because it acknowledges, embraces, and harmonizes everything in its wake. Christian scholars have termed this form of epiphany, which so much characterizes wise love, as coincidentia oppositorum in Latin, or that moment where, after duly undergoing the perplexing rite of passage to maturity, things normally seen opposed coincide to reveal an underlying unity. So, here what I'm trying to say, now comes my translation of that. In one sense, paradox is the gateway to maturity. No. Until and unless we learn to think paradoxically, we somehow remain infants. Even if we are 40, 50, 60, 70 in our passport, in our way of dealing with reality will be very simplistic, very narrow. So true spiritual life requires some form of initiation into paradox. And I'm not, but by this I don't mean we will create a ceremony and tonight you will be all initiated into that, but the practice itself is inviting us to that form of initiation, you know, like to enter into that realm. The capacity of holding apparent opposites without going into the extremes of certainty or cynicism. Because many times those are the two extremes of the pendulum. Toxic certainty, this is like this, and this is not like that, black and white. Or cynicism, I doubt about everything. No. Nothing exists, nothing is true. No. Both and. No. Gray areas. Spaciousness, accommodation. How to accommodate what today feels unaccommodatable for me. That's a daily challenge. Okay, I feel these two things are clashing with each other and I need to pick one and reject the other. Is there a place to allow them to give space to both of them and sit with both of them and integrate both of them? One of the chapters of this book is vulnerability and empowerment. And that in itself may sound paradoxical in the beginning because we may see vulnerability as weakness, and empowerment is empowerment. So how can weakness give empowerment? No? One saying the opposite of the other, but properly, paradoxically understood, acknowledging our weaknesses in a proper way gives place to power. So paradox is very much about the gray. Once I remember writing an article about how gray is my favorite color. Actually, purple is my favorite color, but gray is my favorite color in this sense, right? That is not black, not white, but in between, right? And it is said there are like 256 shades of gray. Once I remember making a play of words, we came with this notion of the grace of grace. The grace or the mercy of the grace, the varieties of the shades of gray. So we have to look for the grace of grace. So gray is not confusion. It's not like you are confused. Pick black or white. No, gray is integration of black and white. In gray we find an integration of the opposites. Like a meeting place of light and shadow. Like a meeting place. Place of faith and doubt. Again, that's another paradox. Doubt can nourish your faith. Well, like Richard Rohr will say, right? The opposite of faith is, and everyone is doubt. No, sorry. certainty. What? We tend to think faith is all about certainty. No, no, faith is a journey with mystery, and doubt can nourish that journey. So again, all this is paradoxical thinking because it's counterintuitive to the usual way we think in binary terms, dualistic terms, oppositional terms, black and white, Kuru Pandava, dichotomy. That's the beginning of the Gita, Kuru Pandava, black and white, non-paradoxical thinking. And the person who is thinking like that is depicting the Gita as blind. Dhritarashtra. I mean, he was blind, but not only physically. So if we cannot think paradoxically, it's a form of blindness. And that's why our tradition refers to the sages and the saints as seers of truth. Rishi means a seer, someone who sees, in opposition to a blind person. Omagyananti Miranda say, oh Guru, open my eyes. Put the ointment of knowledge, divine knowledge, paradoxical thinking. Oh, now I'm seeing things in its real nature. Again, as we talked yesterday, construction, deconstruction, reconstruction. This is ongoing process in that direction. If we avoid these tensions, if we try to escape this type of complexity, our life and spirituality will remain considerably shallow, basically, unnuanced. Like very, how do you say, like plain, flat, without the ups and downs, the twists and turns, the zigzag, the dynamics and the nuance that any fully integrated person will express. And again, one of the fruits of paradox is inclusivity. Sometimes we condemn exclusivism, no, racism, fundamentalism, all these isms, which we are okay not to be okay with them. It's not healthy, but the opposite of that is inclusivism, inclusivity. And inclusivity doesn't only mean like, let's honor men and women and this gender and this race and this color. Yes, but inclusivity in gaining more capacity to include what comes to my life. Paradox means that. Paradox is a form of generosity. I'm giving a place to what's knocking on my door. That without paradox, I would like to shut the door on that and never open that door. Because it's complex to integrate that, to allow, to give place to something that seems contradictory. So being grounded in paradox helps us to really live inclusivity. If not, inclusivity remains only theoretical. We can all talk about inclusivity, but if I'm not living a life grounded in paradox, I'm actually escaping inclusivity, real inclusivity. So genuine inclusivity means I'm perceiving contradictions in me to begin with. Here you have a saffron walking contradiction. But at the same time, that contradiction is coexisting with a greater wholeness. So there's a place for those two things. And when I see the greater wholeness, contradiction no longer same as contradiction. What I perceive as a contradiction from a bigger picture is no longer a contradiction. So that's an important thing, no? What do we perceive as a contradiction and how that can stop being a contradiction when seen from a bigger picture? Thinking outside of the box. And as I mentioned in this quote that I just shared, I like the expression hosting capacity. Yeah. We have to develop our hosting capacity for God to come to our lives, how to host the divine presence with more spaciousness, with more how to host each other. It's not just hosting in terms of open the door, bring a glass of water and tell everyone which is the room. But hosting is receiving the other person and making place for all that person has to share with us. Mm-hmm. In one sense, that's love's highest expression, its ongoing capacity to accommodate and include, and we are being included and accommodated ongoingly. That's why I always give the example of the GPS pushing our heart, and he's accommodating us, and invites us to go in certain direction, participate with him, and we go in the opposite direction. You know, contrarians we are, and Krishna recalculates. Like a GPS, recalculating, reaccommodating, creating more spaciousness, finding a new way. So we are constantly hosted by God's ongoing recalculation system. So we are invited to extend the same favor, so to say, to reality. And to be able to understand love more deeply, because again, love, as I also mentioned in the quote, love moves in a zigzag way. Here we're doing an exercise with straight lines, just to make the point outside of the box. No? But give me a pen. Love moves like this. Right? And you have how to follow the rhythm of that, right? How to find beauty in that. It's like, oh, that's so exactly. Yeah. Sorry, it was a little bit intense, but I will have done a spiral or something more aesthetic. But love, the point is, love never moves in a straight line, right? It's not a predictable thing. No. It's not that we have to sign a contract with Krishna before committing ourselves in love to the divine. And okay, but promise me that you will be very predictable, that everything will be in my control, comfort zone. Let me know in advance where you play. We'll play the flute next night. Put things in boxes, please. That contract does not exist, basically, right? So the course of love is very, again, very winding. Winding? Winding. 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 Sorry. Yeah, windy. Not windy. The wind moves freely, right? Moves out of its own way. So paradoxical love embraces both ascent, descent, union, separation, joy, agony, suffering, compassion. I mean, all that is love. Mm-hmm. Rupa Goswami Nuchval Nilamani, even expressing different nuances of love, he speaks about the rasas, and the secondary rasas include anger, mm-hmm. include disgust, includes chivalry and awe and wonder and fear, but all in the context of love. So, which is very different to what we may have experienced so far about all that stuff. So we have to be careful not to throw out the baby with the No, he even speaks about envy. And maybe many for us it's like, how can envy coexist with love? We may not be capable to imagine that. But his point is, whenever there is love, all the other emotional spectrum we know is accommodated in love. Again, that's the capacity of love, all accommodate. Everything finds its proper original ideal expression. Even what we may think here is contradictory, undesirable, bad, wrong. It's not bad, wrong. It's just that we are expressing all that without love. And when there is no love, even the so-called nice things are not that nice. Right. That's one. I remember one phrase. One came when writing Radical Personalism was, "When there is love, when there is no love, everything becomes an excuse. When there is love, everything is justified. Not to justify the unjustifiable, but if there is genuine love, everything is justified. Meaning everything finds its place. Everything is accommodated. Mm-hmm. So love includes everything: ecstasy, heartbreak." And so on and so forth. So the zigzag, moving in zigzag, is not a deviation, right? It's deviating from the straight line. No, it's not deviation, right? It's the natural rhythm of everything existence, basically. Basically, nothing grows in straight lines. Now, look at the tree. You will never see a tree like doing like this and the branches like that. That's horrible. I mean, like, try to imagine all of nature, all the curved, like winding, mowing of natures, suddenly all in straight lines. Oof, we'll just try to take a spaceship and go to Mars or something, whatever. Rivers are not flowing like this. So everything is zigzag. But sometimes we are the ones, the contrarian ones, trying to insist on straight lines, everything. And that means we are moving against nature. That's violence. Because everything is moving naturally in one direction and we insist in another. So anyhow, I try to refer to that here at STAD, embracing paradoxes, basically as a rite, a rite of passage,
yeah.
Right? When we move beyond a threshold from linear thinking, predictability, logic, math, I have nothing against any of that, but just at one point it doesn't work when we are addressing what lies beyond that. So now I want to share with you that I mentioned about paradox in my first three books. I got stuck on the first one. In the second one, Radical Personalism, I not only have a quote to share, but there's a whole chapter on paradox. So I won't torture you reading a whole chapter during a class, but there's a chapter called, which was the name? Divine Ignorance, Knowing Through Darkness, Doubt and Paradox, something like that. I felt it was very, very necessary. At least I can share with you one section, one brief sentence from that, which comes after what I just shared with you. Okay.
Sorry. I was explaining.
Most of life's main epiphanies, no, epiphany means like an aha moment, right? Like a revelation. Most of life's main epiphanies belong to the realm of the counterintuitive and the paradoxical. Yeah? So your greatest aha moments probably won't come in a very clear, safe, predictable situation. We'll catch you by surprise. What was that? Right. Therefore, any prospective spiritualist should learn to coexist with these features, even love them. No? It's not like, okay, let's try to tolerate paradox. What to do? We cannot avoid that. No. Let's try to fall in love with that. Simply put, we can call this coexisting patience. No? To coexist with paradox, we can call it patience. Since the virtue of patience is exactly that, the willingness to coexist with what you cannot control. Right? So that's patience. Again, patience is not like just tolerating something and expecting it to become different and to finally turn out as I would like it to be. That's not patience. Patience is sitting with something that lies beyond my control and learning from that. Not trying to change that, not trying to manipulate that, but trying to see it enough time, close enough, attentive enough, patient enough, so that which unsettles me starts to reveal its secrets. That's patience. We kind of make that play of words in English, but if you will all be Spanish speakers, I will make a play of words with patience in Spanish, which is...
No, I'm not
that. She knows some Spanish. She knows the word, but paciencia.
Mm-hmm.
So paciencia. And paciencia, pas means peace, and ciencia means science in Spanish. So paciencia, we could say, is the science of peace. So patience. Somehow we can connect. If you go back to the Latin, you will find a similar root there. If you want to be in peace, again, many times we think, oh, to be in peace means that everything happens as I will like, right? Whenever finally reality agrees to submit to my sweet will, there will be peace. That will never happen, sorry. So interestingly, in Spanish, at least, paciencia or patience means the science of peace, patience, right? That willingness to coexist with what you cannot control. So it's the exact opposite of I want everything to happen as I like, then there will be peace. No, learn to sit with the things that are not happening like you would like. Sit with that, be patient, trust the unfolding of reality, trust it, learn from it. That will give you peace. Confirmed. So the willingness, patience is the willingness to coexist with what you can't control. And I forgot to add that part, while deeply trusting it. Yeah. It's not just, okay, I'm waiting and I'm totally cynic and untrusting, but trusting it. That's basically the price to pay to live in the bigger picture. Paradox, again, outside of the box, bigger picture. We must hold on to a bit of doubt and anxiety. That's a quote from Father Richard. We must hold on to a bit of doubt and anxiety about the exact how, if, when, where, and who of it all, but never did that.
Never
did that. I will repeat. We must hold on to a bit of doubt and anxiety, like some openness to uncertainty, and I'm not so sure, and I don't know, about the exact how, if, when, where, and who of it all, but never did that.
Never did that.
Never did that. Did that. In other words, I trust the never. I never doubt that Krishna loves me unconditionally. But how that will be shown, how it will come in my life, when, I don't have a clue. So I have to coexist with that mystery. Sorry, I was not born in England, sir.
It's the that certain time, like it's that.
So I never doubt the that in terms of the reality is not conspiring against me. Reality is in my favor. I never doubt that. But how that will come to my life, when, through whom, if, that, no.
Yeah.
I don't know. But I can rest on that foundation. Is it clear now?
Yes.
In the words of Henry Nouwen, he will say, God loves you unconditionally. That's your only certainty. Everything else is uncertain. But if you have that certainty in place as a foundation, you can coexist with the mystery unknown of everything else literally being outside of your control. Which doesn't mean that we don't do anything and we become fatalistic or, oh, I don't know, but at the same time, not being overtly dependent. Okay, I will do it like this and this has to happen, but leaving some space for things going on differently and that being okay. So again, what this quote is trying to tell us is most genuine revelations are counterintuitive. They do not make sense in the usual way things make sense. Because when we try to have a higher, deeper revelation, it invites us to operate in a different level, in a different way of thinking. Many times truth often hides in what first appears contradictory. Truth often hides in what at first appears unreasonable. Not always, but at times you may find that. At first, right? What's that? You read, I don't know, Krishna the Bhagavad Gita, Sarva Dharma Parit, abandon all religion. What's that? Relax. Stay enough with that verse, get the context, have someone explaining that, and so on and so forth. Right. So again, the art of spiritual life is not about, how to say, resolving any all tension, all contradiction, but many times learning to stay with that. Sometimes we unconsciously we have become like problem solving machines. Like I'm always to solve a problem. Instead of thinking what I see as a problem is coming to solve me. Instead of me solving the problem solving me. And if the problem came to solve me, how much that is a problem? If I am the one that needs to be solved, probably I am the problem. I mean, not to over-identify with I am a problem, but just not to project that onto the outside and just put on my shoulders the baggage that I'm a problem solver and everything around me needs to be solved by me. Not necessarily. Many times it's just coexisting with mystery rather than demanding clarity. Again, many times we get nervous if things do not become clearly quick enough, clear quickly enough. Right? What's the meaning of this? Sit down with that. No, no, no. I want to know what's the meaning of that. If you want to know what's the meaning of that, sit down with that. That's the only way you can get to know what's the meaning of that. Learn to sit with questions. Do not become addicted to answers only. Stay with the question, and the answer will come naturally. Sometimes people, it happens to me a lot, people think that being a Swami means being some type of automatic answer. We don't all no longer have answering machines, but I feel like one when sometimes people ask certain questions, they just expect you to give like them. And sometimes they get so frustrated when I'm not giving an absolute answer that it is this. When it's like, it could be this, it could be that. Or as I say, you're recently one of my favorite answers, at least to start an answer, quote unquote, answer, will be these two words. Huh? It depends.
Yeah.
Again, why are you saying depends? Because it depends. Depends on the situation, who you are, your background, so many things are there. But sometimes we want to be simplistic, reductionistic. Just give me the one line formula so everything is magic and I don't have to grow and mature like I'm supposed to. So we want to be simple but not simplistic. Now, those are two separate words. So to be a simple person, in our tradition we'll say Vaishnav, devotee of Krishna, Shalalata, which means simple. But sometimes we read that as simplistic. And in simplistic, we are escapist of paradox. Because we want to be simple. Maharaj, stop talking about all that stuff. Just be simple. Just say, chant Hare Krishna, be happy, and let's go for lunch. That's simple. Lunch, table, tennis, I mean, let's be simple. Why you insist on making it complicated? Because simplicity is not being simplistic. Simplicity is the integration of complexity. You learn to embrace complexity. You stay with mystery and the unknown, and gradually you integrate that, and then you become a simple person. It's not that there's no complexity. There's integrated complexity. And that translates to simplicity. Simplistic or simplisticness is spiritual bypassing, basically. Mm-hmm. Escaping from what needs to be integrated. So patience, we are talking about patience. I mean, all in the concept of paradox, but patience with mystery, patience with those things that we cannot control. Patience is a form of surrender, right? Trusting the unfolding of things and understanding things require time sometimes to unfold properly. And I have to wait. And sometimes in the waiting, it hurts or it's complex. It's not like I'm having a very enjoyable moment that I'm during my every one of my waitings. Generally, we don't like to wait for anything. Right? And the culture, society, world we are living is going faster and faster. So patience is a less and less popular virtue because patience means waiting. And we slow down, put pause. It's like, no, let's get faster and faster. So we start to skip all these crucial transition periods that we need to have to be integrated human beings, and we become dismembered, again, dysfunctional, shallow, superficial. So again, patience is not a passive thing. No, it's not like, okay, I'm sitting and waiting. Patience is active trust. It's very active. Imagine yourself in a relationship with someone you love, and and some complex situation is there, but you know that person loves you and you love that person. So you have to have patience of what will happen in this. But it's in that patience, again, hopefully you are not becoming more and more distrustful and cynic and fatalistic, but it's a way of strengthening your trust in the other person, in the complexity of the situation you may be in. So it's an act of love, actually, patience. It's a willingness to remain open, to trust what we cannot control. While trusting, there is an unseen hand at work, always. Anyhow. Last quote, since I mentioned I'm talking about paradox in my three books. Now we are in this retreat talking mostly about this one, the third one, Evolution and Divine Love. Let's go to one little section here in page 81. Says, I like first line. Sorry if it sounds a little narcissistic. I like what is written here. But it came, so I'm not the author. It's just like instrument. Paradox holds the most truth. Oh, that's the one line I like. That's why I put it. Whenever you see something italics in my book, it's like the author liked that line. So paradox holds the most truth. It's not that without paradox there is no truth at all, but in paradox there is holding of more truth, more spaciousness, again, more stuff. It's a one line. What I'm reading now, this paragraph is kind of a summary of what we have shared so far. The more we embrace its tension, paradox's tension, the more we understand the fundamental fabric of reality, moving beyond superficial and oversimplified frameworks. When our perspectives lack paradox, our comprehension remains shallow and trivial. Paradox invites a creative tension that elevates reality to an entirely different place, where things are no longer confined to the binaries, good or bad, black or white, changeless or ever fresh, but thrive continuously in a state of paradox, full of wonder. In the realm of paradox, we can hold a measure of certainty, yet only tentatively, as we are called to coexist with mystery, humility, and the ceaseless revelation that fuels all true discovery and learning. When reality is devoid of paradox, subtlety and depth fade away. In such a state, God Himself, the ultimate paradox, may likewise slip from our grasp. So paradox ki jai. As you can see, without paradox, we are deprived of awe and wonder, which is the very essence of ultimate love. Here I'm describing Bhagavan God as the ultimate paradox. So we are here trying to know God, to love God, to grasp the divine, which in itself is the ultimate paradox. No? In page 70 and 71, I share some of those paradoxes. I say, like, scripture paints the divine not only as deeply content, yet ceaselessly desiring. Also independent, yet dependent. The supreme controller and yet supremely controlled by love. Immanent, yet transcendent. Unconquerable, yet wholly conquered. Fully enlightened, yet bewildered by love. So all those contrasts are there in Krishna. So I like to conclude with a few words before we also go to one exercise, because this one was not official an exercise, it was just a bewildering moment. But to remind ourselves, we are talking about paradox, and all of us, or most of us, are here trying to understand and practice what we call Gaudiya Vaishnavism, this particular tradition. And the name of our philosophical system is Achintya Bheda Aveda Tattva. So this has a lot to do with paradox, because the word achintya could be translated as paradoxical. Sometimes we could translate it as inconceivable. And it's the first word, right? Achintya. Abhidhatata. So this is what we are about. And it starts with the word paradoxical. So our whole philosophical system starts with paradox. Inconceivable doesn't mean you cannot understand it. It just means you cannot understand it in the usual ways you understand things. So a new type of thinking is required, and then all will make sense. So achintya means that. Now, for example, Jiva Goswami translates achintya as shastraika gunatvam. That which can only be understood through shastra, through the scriptures, not otherwise. And the idea here is, again, not to present a rigid dogma like get the book, if not, you are not understanding anything, but to understand that scriptures speak paradoxically. It takes us to a realm beyond mere logic and mere black and white binary thinking. When you are dealing with sacred revelation, how Srila Vyasadeva, our main scripture is Srimad Bhagavatam, how Vyasadeva received the Bhagavatam, Narada Muni say, that was an interesting homework. I won't give that to you yet. We are not yet ready. But Narada Muni, the guru, told Vyasadeva, when he expressed, I'm dissatisfied with all that I've written so far, we talked about that the other day, he said, okay, here is the homework. Go and enter into samadhi. Vyasadeva could do that. Okay. He sat and entered into perfect trance. Trans-rational. Now, trance is not logical level math thinking, but it's supra-logical, trans-rational, samadhi. He entered there and the Bhagavatam came through that trance. Samadhi, basha, I say it sometimes. In the Bhagavatam is written in the language of samadhi, in the language of trance, which is paradoxical. It's not, again, the usual black and white thinking language we may use. So when we say, when Jiva Goswami says achintya means that which can only be understood through the scripture, it also means, again, not only read the book and that's the only way, but understand that the sacred revelation speaks in certain language. When you get that language, when you access paradox, oh, what didn't make sense will make sense now. And then achintya means that paradox, and then to illustrate what do we mean by that, says bheda bheda. Tattva. Tattva means reality. Reality is paradoxically, achintya, a bit different and non-different. Which again, for the logic brain is like, no, no, if something is different, it cannot be non-different. Right? Again, on one level of understanding, it is this or it is that. Either or thinking, not both and. But Bhagavatam said reality, tattva, is paradoxically different, one and different, at the same time. Simultaneous coexistence of unity and diversity. That's the name of our philosophy. That's what we are supposed to be doing. Trying to live and understand that. And of course, someone will say, but that refers only to Krishna and his energies. No, like God is one and different from his energies. All his energies are inseparable from him. In that sense, they are one, but they are different from him because we have our own individual. Yeah. But the point is, someone will say, no, that's only between Krishna and his energies. It's not about the whole of reality. But the whole of reality is Krishna and his energies. There's nothing outside of that. So that encompasses the whole of reality. So this principle of achintya, veda, veda, tattva exists in every aspect of reality. This paradoxical, simultaneous coexistence of unity and diversity can be found anywhere. You name it. No? As Prabhupada said, the sun. We could say, oh, the sun is entering the room. And you say, yes, that's why we can see each other, because there are no lights. No, it's not that the candle is like lighting the whole room. The sun is like the sun entered the room. Yes. But no. Yes. Not the sun. If the sun who have entered the room, the whole house is over. So it enters and it doesn't enter. It does and it doesn't at the same time. Right? Yeah. And we find that in every aspect of nature, right? I also refer to that in radical personalism, I think. For example, I don't know, light is both wave and particle. That doesn't make sense from a certain way of thinking. How can something be a wave and a particle at the same time? Well, it is. So even if we don't need even to be talking about God and about transcendence and mysticism, just become a scientist and explore the natural world, and you will find paradox all over the place. Right? Generally, liquids also, I mentioned that in my book, liquids in general contract in volume when cooling, but in terms of water at 4 degrees Celsius, instead of contracting, water starts to expand. Again, it doesn't make any sense, but that's how it works. So it's not false. You can prove that scientifically, it's just paradoxical. So I just given you a few examples, but you can think about any aspect of in any way you can see everything in terms of unity, simultaneous one and different, unity and diversity in nature, in history, in mysticism, in God, in us as the soul, in social politics, history. You can always find the unity and diversity principle always. That's why we say achintya bhed abhed. But to understand again paradox, we need to develop paradoxical thinking. We need to operate in that way of seeing things. In Buddhism, they have this famous tradition of koans, right? To help the student to go to that place. And they will present one question that is impossible to solve, at least impossible from the usual way of solving things. Like for example, the famous one is, what's the sound of one hand clapping? And again, immediately our mind was like, to find an answer to that. And you hear about the stories between teacher and student. The teacher is asking the student, what's the sound of one hand clapping? And the student will come to the answer 25 years after that. After sitting with the question for one quarter of a century. Oh, now it made sense. But it makes sense in the form of an epiphany, not in making my brain like exhausted. It's not from this place that you can solve that. We'll talk in 25 years. So again, paradoxical. In the Vedanta Sutra, we say tarka pratishtana. That's an interesting line. It's a sutra, it's an aphorism. Tarka or logic, apratishtanat. Pratishta means position. Apratishta means no position. So through logic alone, you have no ground. You end up in limbo. That's my contemporary translation of that aphorism. The limbo logic. So logic has a purpose. I mean, I'm not saying discard your logic in any way. You need logic and numbers and math to operate and to... On some level, and on another level, no, it's no longer enough. We don't have time to go there now, but you can take time to study about Kurt Gödel, how do you pronounce that? Famous mathematician. So he's a mathematician, of logic, numbers, and he shows how, even in the realm of mathematics and numbers, there is a point when you need to start to operate differently. Because things start to get too paradoxical and numbers alone do not make sense. So you need to start to develop another new mathematics because things become too messy for the way we used to put things in boxes, right? So anyhow, some thoughts I want to share with you today in the context of evolution and divine law, because again, this book speaks about God and reality always growing and always evolving. And there is something changeless about this. There's something dynamic about it and how to accommodate and coexist with all that. And how paradox, yeah, really permeates every fiber of existence. So let's go to an embodied exercise so we can all try to translate all that into a sharing with each one of us. So we will do it in Let me count. I have to count now. Yeah. So we'll make groups of three, and one group will be, we'll make two groups of two, like yesterday, and the rest will be groups of three. So the idea, this is the prompt, right? It will be similar. Take turns in sharing. While we'll be speaking for a few minutes, the other two, or the other one, depending on the group, will be listening attentively, bearing witness without preaching, advising, telling people what to do with their lives, just unconditional regard and reception, holding space, again, hosting capacity. So you have to, the one who speaks, you describe some paradox in your life. Mm-hmm. Something that once felt contradictory. Mm-hmm. But that now you are beginning to see it as part of a deeper wholeness. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So describe a paradox in your life. Something that at one point in your life really felt contradictory. Doesn't make any sense. But eventually has started to be felt, seen as part of a deeper wholeness. It also belongs. I can give you a few examples, but you don't need to go here. No? Of course, you decide that yourself. And I don't know. I want solitude, but I need connection. Same opposites, but not necessarily. And again, or as I said before, I feel weak, and I'm discovering strength in my weakness. No? Again, in the beginning felt just weakness. Now weakness is incorporating strength as well. Or as we were talking these days, I love my tradition, but I need to question my tradition. And I'm questioning my tradition from a place of loving my tradition. Right? Things like that. Again, please do not just copy-paste the examples. Whatever feels, maybe if something of that feels relevant, then you can do that, but whatever feels relevant. So we will take turns. Each one will speak like for 3 minutes. And those who are in the group of two, you can spend a few more minutes. So 2 or 3 minutes each. And at the end, I will be playing the gong, not the gong. This is a singing bowl. Sorry. We have a gong over there. We can bring the gong here. So I will be playing the singing bowl when the 3 minutes pass and you shift turns and so on. And at the end, you can share for 2 or 3 more minutes all together what did you notice about paradox? How can contradiction become a teacher rather than a block? Which is your lesson from all that? So I will put pause to the video. I always say, like, I love to see you sharing hearts with one another, and I feel myself like the worst possible monster interrupting the conversation. But as I always say, feel free to continue the exchange outside of the box of this class, and you can talk after during the day, during this day. So that's another way of thinking outside of the box.
That's how you resolve the paradox.
That's the only way. Yeah, I have to resolve that one in one way or another. Because so anyhow, a few words we want to share today about paradox. I hope the exercise, the sharing, helped to integrate that in one way in the back and forth of sharing in human hearts. And let's be at peace with paradox, basically. Let's not see paradox as a threat, as a problem, as something to fix, as something that is a confirmation that we are wrong, right? But a mystery to inhabit, right? And be at peace with that, right? That's at least part of the intention of writing my first book is that, no? Okay, the divine is ever-evolving and changeless, and there's always something ever-evolving and changeless about everything. It's something one, something different, something. There's stillness and movement, coexisting in the same heartbeat. So to live in love is to live in that same rhythm, basically, to accept the how things operate and accept them for what they are. Complete and unfinished in one sense, always trying to attain more completeness, certain but open at the same time, and so on and so forth, right? So let's normalize what sometimes we have stigmatized. You know? We have stigmatized ourselves for being a walking paradox. Let's normalize that and accept that's a pattern of reality. So, and the more love grows, the more it holds has the capacity to hold all the things at the same time. So gradually, let's make our heart that type of vessel, very strong and broad, and deep, trying to stay in patience and coexist with these apparent contradictions. And again, when we are met with contradiction in our life, in our path, hopefully we can see that as an initiation into something, really, not the beginning of the end, so to say, or not again as a threat, not as a confirmation that we are bad, wrong, unworthy, but a form of initiation. Initiation, right. Initiation is not just putting a fire, so aha, this is your new name, you're initiated. No, initiation is ongoing. It's an ongoing process that comes through so many things. So in many ways, paradox is a womb of revelation, a womb of initiation. And yeah, it's something that comes to our life to make our heart grow and expand so the infinite can find place there. No, I mean, imagine you have to hold enough space to make place for the infinite to enter there. So this is what we are into, this project of expanding the heart, making it more accommodating, more encompassing. So I hope it was a nourishing sharing. It was for me. So look forward to further sharing. And a few details before we conclude. Of course, we are doing Lectio Divina, which for our friends who just came now is a type of mystical contemplation of the scripture, which basically entails reading some line or some passage for some time, contemplating its meaning. It's a short one. I will tell you which one is for today. And a short one, and you can just read it, think about it, ruminate on that, following the footsteps of Rumi. Ruminate, make more room for that. Ruminate, more spaciousness. And when you have reached the limits of your own rumination, you can turn to prayer and try to ask the divine, the sweet absolute, to shower you with more insight, with more spaciousness, with more revelation. And then listen in silence attentively what's coming as the result of my prayer, and then seeing how to put that into action. If it helps, you can journal, write about it. So we have been doing that the last 2 days, and today we'll do it also with a very short line. It's not a whole paragraph like we have done so far. And basically it's contemplating this line: Achintya Bheda Abheda Tattva. If it helps, you can write it in Sanskrit, but then you can translate it in this case as in this way. You can write it down if you will. The totality of reality, not reality, the totality of reality, just to make it clear, is a paradoxical coma, simultaneous coexistence. The totality of reality is a simul paradoxical.
Oh.
What?
So we're not writing in shorthand. Slow down.
That's why I'm repeating the same thing again. I'm saying it's the same thing again. I'm not continuing. The totality of reality is a paradoxical coma. I'm stopping. Coma. Simultaneous.
What? Coma, not coma.
Coma.
Coma, not coma.
Coma.
Coma, not like, yeah, no, we don't want anyone to die here. Yeah, yeah. The totality, I won't say coma, the totality of reality is a paradoxical, simultaneous coexistence of apparent opposites. And then you can put the...
When was the last coexistence?
Of apparent opposites. And then you can put this M dash, unity and diversity.
And
this long line that you have in the yeah,
and it's long dash, and it was after the
totality of reality.
I go
the whole way just in case. The totality of reality is a paradoxical, simultaneous coexistence of apparent opposites, M dash, unity and diversity. So that's the line. That's the way of translating Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva. Just sit with that And generally we are spending that time between 5 and 6 for Elena, Dominic, and Charlotte. You know, from 5 to 6, generally we are spending like silent time, and we are doing this during that time, at least part of that time. So that will be the line for today. And I'm not receiving questions now because in the evening we have Q&A, question exploration. So you have any questions or sharing some things you may like to present regarding this or anything else? We'll do it at 6 p.m. today. And tomorrow, as I mentioned in the beginning, but just for those who do not know, tomorrow we are starting Kartik, this auspicious month in our tradition. So tomorrow we'll a little bit, not interrupt, but sacred disruption, no problem. Deconstruct, we will speak on, we will, Jamuna ask for that. So if you don't like that, you talk to her. We'll be exploring together the Damodar Ashtaka. These 8 verses that we will be singing every day, starting from tomorrow in the evening. But in the morning, we will go verse by verse and try to share some words about Kartik in the context of this celebration. Thanks so much. See you later. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ki jai. Shri Hari Nam Sankirtan ki jai. Sadhu Sangha ki jai. Gaur Premananda Hari Nam. Panchakalpatarubhyasya sindhubhyo cha paritanam bhavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo.